Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon. Here to do just that, it's Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick, New York. Gordon has been in the biz for over 30 years now. Went back to factory mechanics training school in Wolfsburg, Germany back in 79. And since then, well, it's been off to the races. Prior to starting his own business in Hoosick Falls, Gordon worked as an automotive tech, a service advisor, and assistant service manager at the Annis Corporation. That's a Volkswagen, Porsche, and Audi dealership in Massachusetts. Gordon, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Great to be back.
Well, I'll tell you what. Having you here is always very reassuring for me, because all the things that I think are going to be major problems with my car, while they might be major, at least early on in the game, you reassure me and say it's going to be all right.
I always try to make it sound optimistic. And I'll say that too when customers call up or bring their car in and they have a big, long look on their face. It might be something really quick and easy. You never know.
Yeah.
And if it's bad, it's bad. But let's start out thinking it's not.
And usually I get the call a couple days later. Mr. Graff, it's not good. That's usually what they say.
Believe me, when I call people and they have caller ID,
yeah,
some people that know me very well, they'll say, all right, how bad is it?
800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Now, if you tweet your questions at WAMC Vox Pop, or if you check in on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC radio, our producer, Patrick Donges, wants me to tell you that you should include the year, the make, and the model of the vehicle. And obviously tough to do on Twitter, but try to give as much detail as you can. So let's go right to the phones at 800-348-2551. Bob in Albany. Bob, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, Gordon.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So I'm looking to buying a 2002 Avanti convertible. Has 100,000 miles, and the dealer tells me I shouldn't be concerned about that because that particular car is good for 200,000 to 350,000 miles if it's properly maintained. I'm skeptical. I just wanted to hear what you might say.
Well, you know, there's a lot of cars that have the potential to go long life and lots of miles. And the key to any of those vehicles, and some are much more robust than others, is the maintenance it's received from basically day one. And sometimes that's apparent when you look the car over and everything just looks remarkably nice. Do you have any history on the car that did you know of?
It's the claim is that it's been maintained very carefully all the way through. It was a $95,000 car up front, and it was treated as a jewel box. But I haven't had an engineer look at it yet to verify that.
That might be a good idea, to get a set of expert eyes on it. And that 100,000 miles really may not be anything to worry about. You know how they say today, you know, the 50 is now the new 40 or vice versa. It's like that with cars. There was a time when 100,000 miles on a car means it was finished. You know, everything was wrong. It was worn out. They were burning oil, rattling. But cars today are so much better that with the right care, 100,000 miles is not a big thing to worry about at all.
Are you at all familiar with the more recent Avantis?
No, not really. No, unfortunately, that's something that I don't really dabble in too much.
It's an Italian car?
Excuse me?
Is that an Italian car?
Avantis are the only handmade American cars. Huh. They went out of business in 2010, but they were started by Studebaker in the early 60s and then went through some iterations in the 70s and 80s and 90s with new owners and design upgrades.
Hmm.
They're made out of fiberglass. Some of them are made out of Kevlar. They're very, very interesting cars.
Sounds interesting.
Now, how many are they making a year? It's an extremely low number, isn't it?
Well, in the convertibles, Audi made, between 2002 and 2004, or 2001 and 2004, Audi made a total of 53. So, yes, it's very low production.
How about the support? I mean, parts and all that quite available?
It's all GM supported, and supposedly the engine is entirely a GM based engine, and they have no trouble dealing with it.
I think I'd buy the car. Why not?
Wow. Of course, that's not legally binding, Bob. So
that's easy for me to say.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's a $30,000+ car, so you know it needs to be really special, and it looks special. I just, you know, that 100,000 miles is a wild card that I wanted to get some input on, and I thank you for it.
Thank you very much. I'll tell you what, I'd be very leery of spending $30,000 on a 100,000-mile car, but maybe it's great.
You know, you see the older ones at car shows, and they are kind of a cool car. You've seen Avani.
Now I remember. When you mentioned Studebaker, they started in the, late 50s or early 60s?
60s, I believe, yeah.
Very interesting-looking vehicles. Harvey in Monticello. Harvey, you're on.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a 97 Chevy Cavalier. The check engine light came on. I brought it in for service. They said it was a defective gas cap. They replaced the gas cap, but the light stayed on. They said put some mileage on it and it'll go out, but it's still on.
I know what this is. Go ahead.
So what's going on here? How do I get the light out? Inspection's coming up.
Yeah, well, did they test the system and find that it was what's called an evap leak, or did they just say it could be the gas cap? Try it.
They said they spoke like it was definitely the gas cap.
Yeah, well, that's entirely possible, although it's proven that your light came back on, so it's other things. But the reason the light
should be out if they were correct.
Yeah, exactly. And the way this system works, it's called OBD2, Onboard Diagnostics 2. The vehicle's computer is constantly monitoring systems, and it's running checks all the time. As soon as you start the car up till the time you shut it off, the computer is continuously running various tests. So if there's a leak somewhere, and that leak can be anywhere from your gas cap to your engine and anything in between, including all the valves and stuff that are in there, the computer, as it keeps failing that test, it's going to keep that light on forever.
Mm-hmm.
So... And that's one of the toughest ones to diagnose. But what's got to happen is it's got to go back in and get rescanned. And then if it's an evap leak code, they're going to have to do a bunch of testing to pinpoint the cause.
No, I got a real problem. Yeah.
Well, maybe not. It might be easy.
Could be a sensor itself, right?
It could be a sensor. It could be a valve.
Would I be wise to take it to the dealer?
What year is the car? I don't see it on the note.
97 Chevy Cavalier.
The dealer may have a lot of experience in this where a lot of independent shops don't. What I would do is call around a little bit maybe and try to nail somebody down that really does a lot of evap work. It's a tough area of car repair.
I see. So I... Would you suggest if I went to the local dealer, I'd be doing smart, right?
Yeah, because even though a lot of people are fearful of dealers because the labor rate's higher and things like that, they may be able to nail this problem out in much less time, and in the end, you might be better off. So I wouldn't be afraid to do that.
Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Harvey. And, of course, this wasn't an issue until they upgraded emission standards,
exactly. Right? Exactly. 1996 was the big year for this OBD2. Prior to that, if the check engine light came on, it was for a real hard problem, and you almost always felt it. It ran poorly. There was big issues. Now those lights are on for so many different reasons.
Yeah. And, of course, well, maybe not on that car, but you could clear the code and see if it comes back.
I think that's what they already did, and the light came back on.
Okay, let's go to Sean in Kingston. Sean, you're on.
Hey, thanks for having me. I have a question for you about my truck.
All right.
It's a 2000 Chevy S10. It's a V6, and it's in pretty good shape for the year, and it runs great. But it has 228,000 miles on it, and I'm wondering how much longer is this thing built to last?
Well, that subject comes up a lot, and you definitely have gotten some fabulous use out of that vehicle. Could it potentially go longer? Absolutely. The question is, what is it going to take to do it? And if you're reaching a point where you say, if this thing has a $1,000 failure, I'm done with it, then that'll be the end of it. But, you know, key again, it's preventive maintenance, changing the oil on time, doing, How many of those miles have you put on this vehicle?
I would say about half of them.
So you've over 100,000 miles under your ownership.
Right.
So you seem to be doing the right thing with it. I would continue to do what you're doing as far as maintenance goes and taking care of the vehicle. And
okay.
I got a feeling rust is probably going to become an issue with it. Is it very rusty now?
No, not at all. And that's a surprising thing, is that the outside of the shopping cart dent in the side, it's pretty straight and pretty clean.
Well, I think you're doing great. I would just really don't stop taking care of it. That's the thing. A lot of people, they stop taking care of their cars. The older they get, the higher mileage. They say, I'm not going to tune this thing up, and I'm not going to change the oil every 3,000 miles. The thing's had it. And then, sure enough, it falls apart.
True enough. Well, good luck, Sean. Oh. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the advice. Bye.
All right, then. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can go the Twitter route, WAMC Vox Pop, or even Facebook. Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. More with Gordon Fricke, ladies and gentlemen. Gordon Fricke, he's here. I'm somewhat.
You think
here.
It's the gardening show, don't
That's
you?
Right. Hey, we'll do that next. Coming up.
Support comes from Adventure Outfitters, Hadley, Massachusetts. Offering outdoor clothing, camping equipment, cross-country skis, snowshoes, climbing equipment, canoes, and kayaks. Open evenings until 9. AdventureOutfitter.com. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. Oakwood Friends School, Poughkeepsie, New York, a college preparatory boarding and day school for grades 6 through 12, OakwoodFriends.org. And Northshire Bookstore, presenting two off-the-shelf events this fall, Alexander McCall Smith and Jeffrey Toobin, Northshire.com.
Boy, did we just get a scolding by our producer, Patrick Donges. Apparently no one's tweeting any questions in today, and he's quite upset. So what do we do?
Well, you can't tweet while driving, so maybe a bunch of our callers are on the road, or some of them anyway.
You're smart. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Michelle in Pittsfield, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a 97 Volkswagen Jetta, and the alarm system seems to get all messed up. It has like 160,000 miles on it. And last summer and fall, we would drive down the road, and the outside alarm would all of a sudden start going off, and the only way to stop it is to put our key in the passenger door to stop it. So I'd have to pull over, get out, and do that and stop it. Because the driver's keyhole broke, and now that stops, but we have this, when we open the driver door, the inside alarm goes off, and we were told way back when with the other alarm that if we tried to cut it, the car would never start again. Is that a fact?
Yeah, that's quite true.
It's been an old faithful for us, that's for sure. And is there a way, like the inside one, is it hooked up to a speaker or something?
No. Well, you mean the beeping sound you're hearing? That's kind of a muffled. What that is that
like
is, that is
okay.
a additional horn that's buried in your left front fender well area, and I think it's a leftover horn from the Volkswagen Beetle days because it sounds like a muffled Beetle horn. But
it's like the key on other cars when you leave your key in the ignition and you open your door.
Yeah, it's not a very frightening alarm. I don't think it scares the crooks
not
away.
Not like the outside one was.
No.
Not like the outside one, you know, like somebody was breaking into
it. Oh, you're talking about the chime that rings inside the car like you left your keys in it?
Yes.
Okay.
Now that's what's happening, but before it was the whole alarm system, like someone was breaking into it, would go off as it was driving down the road.
I got you. Yeah, okay. Here's what the car thinks is happening. It thinks that one of the doors is not shut tight, and that is accomplished by even on your 97, I believe the micro switches are built into your door latches, and the fact that you're having problems with the driver's door. You said that the door, the lock doesn't work with the key anymore on the driver's outside.
Correct. We had a friend replace it, and then that fell out.
Okay. I have a feeling that might be where your problem is, and it might be in the latch itself for that door, or in the locking part of it where the lock cylinder is located, where you put the key in to turn it. That was a big problem on that vintage cars. I can remember those breaking a lot, and we'd have to call the dealer, and they knew these so well that they'd say, we're going to give you a little basket of parts because you're going to need all these little pieces and clips and springs and stuff, and you had to take a bunch of stuff apart. They weren't the worst things to fix after you'd done a few, but I think what you're going to need to do is take it somewhere, and I have a feeling it's going to be related to the driver's door, because that's where you're having your problems.
Now, yes.
One quick thing you could do at home is get some penetrating oil, like WD-40 or any of those things with a spray nozzle.
Yeah.
And lubricate all your door latches quite heavily. And the latch is the part that when you open up the door, it's attached to the door. That's what keeps the door shut.
Okay.
And just spray all the moving pieces in there. Really soak it down, and then open and shut that door a bunch of times so you work that penetrating oil in there. And if you're lucky, it may free up a micro switch, and your problem might go away.
Okay.
And then you won't have to take it anywhere.
That would be great.
Yeah, try it.
Okay, I just have one quick comment. The last caller who said he has a 97 Chevy or whatever,
yeah.
this car also did not pass emissions last fall, and our sticker expired, our reject sticker, and we took it back to get a new reject sticker until we decided if we were going to junk the car or get it fixed, and they said, this is your lucky time because you no longer have to pass emissions. The car was old enough.
On which car? The 97?
My 97 Jetta, yeah.
Mm.
Now we have a sticker.
Interesting.
I think, was the check engine light off the day you brought it in?
No, it's still on.
And
it's been on for over a year now, and they said, now that the car is as old as it is, after January, it didn't need to pass mass inspection as far as emissions.
Oh, you're talking about Massachusetts.
Sorry. New York.
Yes, I'm constantly thinking on our program because...
Okay.
Yeah, okay, Massachusetts is a different story.
Yeah,
we were lucky in that department.
Yeah, good for you.
All right.
Thank you so much, Gordon, and everybody else.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm everybody else. Oh, we have a question here from Facebook. Courtney on Facebook asks, can Gordon speak to buying a Volkswagen Jetta or Passat and where the factory is located? We've heard that it really matters whether or not the cars were built in Germany. Well, this is your specialty.
Well, they aren't all built in Germany. Some are. However, Volkswagen now has a plant open in the United States again. And they are building Jettas there. And I'm not sure if there's other models yet. But depending on the vehicle, they were built in Mexico, Germany, and now in the U.S.,
Do you think that there is a major qualitative difference between the plants, given the rigorous standards?
I was involved in the late 70s with Volkswagen, and there was a plant in the United States. It was in Westmoreland, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And they were building Rabbits.
Okay.
Which were Golfs in the rest of the world, but same car.
Right.
And I used to work on both German and U.S.-built Rabbits, and there was definitely a difference.
Really?
Yes, definitely.
And in part quality or just in build? Or
they wanted to soften up and glitz these cars up, they thought, for the U.S. market. So all the U.S.-built ones had the interior. Everything in the interior was the same color. It was soft. It was cushy. It was trying to look like a German Oldsmobile. And the cars had softer suspension. The early ones had square headlights instead of round. They really wanted to try to make them, they tried to Americanize them, and you definitely felt the difference.
Well, if you're going to buy a German car, I assume you want it to be German.
That's what they were not thinking at that time.
All right, Courtney on Facebook, I hope that helped you. You can check in on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can also tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. That's one word. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and back to the phones we go. Bill in Beacon. Bill, you're on.
Hi. First of all, I want to say, Ray, you're the best Vox Pop host ever.
Well, you're very kind.
It's true.
Thank you.
And I'm not the only person who feels that way. I have a 2007 TSX, and it has this thing where if you're going, you know, over 20 or 30, and you start to accelerate, not real fast, but to a point where it might want to downshift, it hesitates for like a second and a half, which in some situations. I'm used to it now, but in some situations it can be dangerous.
So is this when you are at a normal cruising speeds and you're looking for some extra power, maybe
yeah.
to get ready to pass a car or something like that?
Yeah, or I mean, the time that it really was a problem, I was in passing through Hartford on the highway, and I needed to change lanes suddenly.
So when you stepped on the gas...
When I stepped on the gas, it was like nothing happened for at least a second. It was
so
slow.
So you didn't experience bucking or
no.
You just, there was nothing there for a few seconds?
Yeah, it was just like, hold on, let me decide what gear I'm going to use.
Did you feel that the engine was not responding to your foot?
Yeah.
Okay, because this car has, like most cars today, has a throttle by wire.
Right.
There's no link, there's no physical link between your gas pedal and the engine anymore. It's an
right.
electronic request. So was there a glitch in that request to give it a little more gas, and it didn't? The computer didn't get that information out there quick enough, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cars still require some throttle plate cleaning, some maintenance, but usually that is something that affects them at slow speeds and maybe startup time and just getting off of
right.
idle when you go to take off.
I mean, this car is, when I first noticed this problem, it only had like 20,000 miles on it.
Yeah, that's pretty young to have that. Type of a problem, and I take it there's no check engine light on. You would have mentioned
no.
that. No,
and I took it to the dealer, and they said we can't reproduce
yeah.
your problem. You
yeah,
know?
That's what I was going to predict that would be the case, and no fault of theirs, because if a check engine light came on, it will leave a what they call a freeze frame in the memory of the computer,
mm-hmm.
and we can go in there and take a look at that freeze frame data to see what happened at that time and maybe find the cause.
Right.
But
well, that's good to know in case it ever does.
Yeah, if it does, then that's obviously the time to get it checked.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from any factory service bulletins that might be on that subject, the dealer is right. If it happens that infrequently, there isn't much you can do, I don't think, until it surfaces into a more common problem.
Right. Also, another quick question, just when you're using full synthetic oil, how often should you change?
Well, always a good question. We hear a lot of that, and I'm sure Acura's intervals. Does Acura recommend synthetic oil? I don't think it did for that year.
I don't think so. I don't think they
Now
did.
They are.
Uh-huh.
But if you're doing super nice, easy highway cruising, commuting type mileage, you know, some of the car makers are saying go 10 or 15,000.
Right.
Still too high in my view.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing really bad around town, stop and go, idling, just really bad type of driving, even with full synthetic, 3 to 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, thanks. It was nice to hear about the Avanti, too.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Bill. We appreciate the call. Let's see. It's 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So you mentioned that there are no cars now. All the cars are basically throttle by wire.
I would say the vast majority are. Maybe some of the really low-priced vehicles might still have it.
Yeah.
I don't see too many throttle cables anymore.
I mean, wouldn't that be cheaper to fix?
A cable?
Yeah.
Yes, but it's one of those things where technology has marched on,
yeah,
and emissions are really taking a hold of car manufacturing, and believe it or not, the computer can operate the throttle in a more efficient manner than you can.
Oh, I believe that. Yes, well, having a lead foot, I certainly understand. Paul in Johnstown. Paul.
Hi. I have a 1995 Eurovan camper, Volkswagen Eurovan camper. And I know years ago dealers were recommending undercoating, and consumer magazines were saying, no, it's a waste of money. But the vehicle is that old, and the upper body is in good shape. And I'm wondering, should I now get the undercoating?
Well, you know, there are still
the rust.
There are still some companies that have products that can be applied on an older car, and it's for the most part, a paraffin waxy mixture that never hardens like paint, and it's kind of gooey and sticky all the time, and it can go over old body panels. Now, if you're rusted out, you know, it's not going to do too much for it. Is the car still really absolutely rust-free underneath?
No, it isn't.
It is not?
No, it isn't. That's the problem, you know, with the salt on the roads.
Yeah, okay.
And it being that old.
Okay.
Someone suggested that maybe I should get it sandblasted first. Is that?
Well, to effectively sandblast all that rust away and repaint it, that's a big, big job.
Well, we're talking about the undercarriage. The upper body is okay.
Yeah. Still nasty, nasty work, and kind of somewhat fruitless, because once you get rust down there, it's an awful thing to prevent. Rust never sleeps. You know,
hey,
who said that? Neil Young?
That'd be Neil Young.
Yeah.
Said it in a high voice.
But there are some guys out in the back hills of Vermont that are applying hot oil to cars that are already old and already started to rust. And the oil they're using is environmentally friendly. What it is, I don't know. If it's vegetable, animal.
What does it do?
Well, the oil basically coats the rusty steel and the non-rusty steel, and it blocks out the moisture and the oxygen, and it does tend to halt the rust or slow it down.
Wow. Very interesting.
So that's the only alternative, I think.
All right.
Any idea how you get in touch with somebody like that? You said in the back hills of Vermont?
I wouldn't search Google hot oil, because Lord knows what you'll come up with.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think of, I suppose if you emailed us, we could probably get you an outfit that I know of up in Vermont and get you their number.
That's great. You know, we never get to your contact information until the end of the program. What is your email? I know you're very good at checking your email, Gordon.
Yeah,
so
Ray just said, did you get my last email? No,
2 weeks ago.
I didn't.
Yes. Well, anyway, what is it?
It's GordonF@BarberFricky.com.
GordonF@BarberFricky.com.
Could you spell Fricky for me, please?
F-R-I-C-K-E.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good
thank
luck.
You.
And, Gordon, we have a follow-up here from Courtney on Facebook. She was the one who asked, you know, can you speak to buying a Volkswagen Jetta or Passat and where the factory is located? We heard that it matters whether or not the cars are built in Germany. Her follow-up, just handed to me, how do we know where they're built?
The VIN number.
The VIN.
The first digit of the vehicle's ID number, the VIN number. If it's a W, it's made in Germany. If it's a 1, it's U.S. And I had somebody call me the other day with a VIN number, and it started out with 5.
Yeah.
And that car was made in Brazil.
Wow.
It was a Honda.
I'll be darned. So that's how you do it.
Yeah, the first digit of the VIN number tells the country that the car was built.
Okay, now here's one from Twitter. Gregor, it looks like, on Twitter asks, we recently changed the oil in our 2011 Honda CR-V. The dealer said we had to use a special synthetic oil. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Honda just came out with a full synthetic oil for Honda, and I'm sure Acura too, because it's the same company.
Yeah.
And I have some of it because we're just starting to do some of these, and I can't remember the weight, but it's very, very low. W20 or
really?
Something like that. It's really low, what we would consider to be thin oil.
So that will handle the cold weather better?
Yes, and these engines are very, very tight and high tolerance engines, so that oil is actually fine for them.
Good. Let's go back to the phones the old-fashioned way, 800-348-2551. Chris in New Baltimore, you are on with Gordon Fricky.
Hi there.
Hey.
My friend's family has a 1969 Jeep Cherokee, the limited model, the Grand Cherokee. It's very low mileage, under 50,000 miles. It's been used only at a vacation home on Martha's Vineyard, which sounds like a used car ad, I know. But the question is, it's been taken out on the beach quite a bit. And some people in the know say that almost guarantees the undercarriage is quite badly rusted from the salt and the sand. So my question is, assuming that's true, this is kind of related to the last question on undercoating. Is there some way to salvage any damage at this point, because the mileage is so low and the car would seem to have a lot more value if the undercarriage weren't rusted out?
Sure. Now, it's a 1999?
It is, yes.
Okay. has this thing actually gone through salt water at various times? I mean, you really out there in the surf with this thing, or just on the beach sand?
No, just on the beach. Just on the beach in the sand. You know, they reduce the air in the tires and go out on the beach.
Yeah, yeah. How does it look underneath? Have you ever, you know, kind of looked under?
I don't see the car very frequently, yeah. And I haven't looked. So that's what I'm going to be out there, and I want to look at it.
Yeah, really get under it and look and see how bad it looks. It may not be bad at all. And like I was telling the last caller regarding the rust, the you know, there are some outfits out there that offer these paraffin-based undercoatings or rust proofing, and the guys in Vermont spray oil on them. However, you know, it's a big mess, and for you to get up there, I don't know if people are doing this all over the place or not. I just happen to know of a couple outfits in Vermont that do it. In fact, the state of Vermont was having their vehicles done there, so it's definitely not petroleum oil. You couldn't be spraying that out on a car and going down the road with it. But that's really it. But I would look under. If that Jeep has not been out in any salty winter driving, which it doesn't sound like it has, that thing may be really nice underneath there, and you don't have to do anything.
Yeah. Good. The flip side of that is that it hasn't been on any highway driving. It's literally only been used on Martha's Vineyard and never been on an interstate, never did regular commuting, so I don't know how bad that is for a car.
It might be remarkably nice under there. I don't know, but when you get down there, really get under it and look. See what kind of rust you get.
Yeah. Well, I just meant if I could clarify, apart from the rust issue, just the overall issue of a car that hasn't been driven on, you know, regular commutes, you know, forget the rust issue for just a second. Does that make much of a difference in the overall value of a car?
Well, there's a big debate regarding mileage versus age, and sometimes low mileage on an old car isn't that good, because a lot of things that like to be used and limbered up and operating start to fail because of lack of use. So, you know, definitely the low mileage would be attractive to somebody if you're looking to sell this thing. But you may find if somebody put it on the road and said, we're going to head right out to California in this car, they could start having all kinds of weird problems.
Gotcha. All right.
Okay.
Chris, thanks a lot. Let's go take a break now. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. More coming up.
Support comes from PS21, Performance Spaces for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York. Presenting Parsons Dance, performing Round My World, A Stray's Lullaby, and other recent work on Friday, August 31st and Saturday, September 1st at 8 p.m. PS21chatham.org. H. Houston Sun True Value, Woodstock, New York. Since 1932, a local store featuring hardware, outdoor grills, Benjamin Moore paint, tool and equipment rentals. True Value. Start right, start here. HHoust.com. Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, offering an MS in Engineering Science with a concentration in Environment, Health, and Safety beginning this October. ewp.rpi.edu. And Storm King Art Center, a 500-acre sculpture park in the heart of the Hudson Valley, open Wednesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5:30, and until 8 p.m. on Saturdays, now presenting Light and Landscape. stormking.org.
You know, that's John Harrington. He's going to be at our Linda Norris Auditorium on Saturday night. He's the lead guitar player with Steely Dan. He is a tremendous guitar player, and he has a new album coming out. It actually came out a couple of weeks ago. And, boy, if you like that sort of thing, the Steely Dan and the great musicianship, he's bringing his own trio to the Linda on Saturday night. TheLinda.org for more information. Our guest here today on Vox Pop, the great Gordon Fricke. He is our car expert. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Let's see here. We go to Eric on the road. Eric, I hope your hand's free.
I am indeed. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a 2004 Dodge Intrepid with a 2.7-liter engine, and it's got about 240,000 miles on it. And I have a leak in the what looks like the thermostat right on the top of the engine. And my mechanic tells me that you can't repair it without replacing, I guess the whole unit has a long tube that goes to the back of the engine.
and I'm just kind of trying to verify if that's the case.
Yeah, he's right. That was a very, very common point to leak coolant on those cars. I believe there's a bleeder for the cooling system right in that spot where it's leaking, and that was that was to, when you were refilling it, you'd loosen that up and let the air out of the system. Really great idea, but if I remember correctly, and I haven't seen these lately, but and we have in the past replaced that pipe assembly. It is a bit of a chore to do, but because the corrosion is so slow and long, that I think your guy is probably afraid that bleeder is going to break, which I'm sure it probably will. So, to answer your question, yes, I think you're going to want to replace that piece of pipe.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I appreciate the input then. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Eric, thanks a lot. It's Vox Pop, 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Susan in Schenectady. Susan.
Hi. I seem to have a bad connection here.
Yes, you do.
But at any rate, I have a 90 Toyota Corolla with about 90,000 miles on it.
Susan, I'm sorry. We can't get it. Give us a call back. We'll get you right through, okay? David in Cambridge. David.
Hi. Hi, Gray. Hi, Mr. Fricky. Hi. This is the Smarty Pants Know-It-All punk band drummer from Cambridge.
Oh, not you again. So what's up?
Just a couple of things. I mean, I can expound. There's a couple of things that I can go on about, but I won't because I'm in the way. But your thing about, I used to work on the Volkswagen Rabbits from Westmoreland, Pennsylvania. You're pretty much spot on when it comes to that. There is one thing, though, which is just a bit of trivia. Speaking of, I'm talking about designers. Is George, I believe, I'm really bad with Italian names, but Giorgio Giugiaro, who designed the Rabbit and the Scirocco, actually wanted the car originally to have square headlights in the first place. And all of the Gulfs and the other Rabbits had the round headlights because Volkswagen had a whole bunch of round headlights in their warehouse, and it really teed them off.
Interesting.
So, the idea was it was supposed to be the car's predecessor, the Beetle. Everything was around. And Giugiaro's trademark was basically the T-square, and everything was supposed to be square. Mm. And the round headlights was not part of his plan. So, as far as the build quality goes, it's not the first time, actually. Up until, I think, the 1930s, just before World War II, we built Rolls-Royces in Springfield, Massachusetts. And they were of the same build quality. The bodies, which are usually custom outsourced bodies, were a bit more flamboyant, mind you. The Studebaker Avanti, that was a Raymond Lowy design. He's the one who did the Starlight Coupe back in the early 50s. Yeah. And he's one of the first designers. He also did he probably did your Raising Shaver and the buses that had the Vista window going halfway down the bus body. But he was one of the first designers to try to put the grill under the bumper where it belongs. And by the time you got to 1957, the grill started coming back because you can't sell cars. Look at the Ford Taurus.
Right.
The grill goes away, then it starts to come back again because they're stately. We like grills.
Indeed. But, hey, David, we got about five people behind you, but I appreciate all this information. Let's go to Jim in Kingston. Jim.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
I'm driving a 98 Subaru Forester, and I've got one small oil leak that I know of. I get a drip or two every morning on the driveway, but nothing serious. I top it off whenever I need to. But I was driving home from work the other day, and suddenly the car overheated. It went sky high within a matter of seconds. I pulled over, let it sit for a while, let it cool down, drove home the rest of the way, put in about 6 ounces worth of fluid. That's all it would take, and have driven it since, varying distances, short trips, long trips, two-hour trips, let it run like crazy. I can't get this thing to overheat again. Any idea what might have zipped it over the edge at one time?
Usually when it's an occurrence like that, or if it's very, very random, aside from your worst fears, which, Ray, what are they?
Head gasket?
your thermostat may have just gone haywire for a minute. And the thermostat is just that. It regulates the coolant temperature of the engine. And it's set to open and shut at a predetermined temperature, so your engine stays at pretty close to the same temperature. And it's a unit that has some moving parts in it. And they can stick open, they can stick shut, or they can get really lazy and operate too slowly. Right. If I had to guess, I'd say your thermostat stuck shut on you for a little bit, and then once it got really hot, it forced it open.
Ah.
And I would, as a matter of ruling out what could it be, that's a pretty easy thing to change on that vehicle. And right. If it's got a lot of miles on it, being a 98, and if it's never been changed, it deserves to be changed.
Right, right.
Good, that's a good idea, and not an expensive job.
No, yeah. And while you're at it, Subarus did have a lot of head gasket issues leaking externally.
Right.
When you drain your cooling system to change that thermostat, pick up a bottle of Subaru cooling system conditioner and pour it in when you refill it. You can buy it at your Subaru dealer.
I was under the impression that was only good from 2000 on, that the earlier ones you couldn't use that stuff.
Yeah, you can pour that in anything that has water cooling.
Oh, yeah? Okay,
yeah,
great.
Great stuff.
All right.
Jim, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. It's Cliff in Kingston. Cliff.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey.
I got a 97. I just recently got this 97 Elantra wagon, and I have a couple of issues. The main one is with the tripometer on it. I got it with about 92,000 miles on it. It's got a little over 93,000 now. And it gets... it seems to when it gets up to 100 miles or 200 miles, it sticks. It won't rotate anymore. And I'm wondering if I can change the gauge cluster to one with a tachometer, or if it or do I have to get this one taken out and serviced.
All right, fair question.
Yeah. Now this is not an electronic odometer and tripometer, correct?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Those are mechanically operated. Even though the speedometer is driven electrically, if yours has the real numbers that you saw in the 60s, that's actually moving parts in there.
Yeah.
So there's something going wrong inside of it. To fix it, unless you were very crafty and could do it yourself, that'd be a lot of trouble. To change it, a new one would be probably more money than you want to spend.
I've checked a couple of boneyards.
Right.
And this one over in the East Park has a bunch of Kias and Subarus, and I was told Subarus, Hyundais and Kias, and they all have the same or similar gauge cluster from like 96 to 2000.
Okay.
They use the same setup, either with the tach or without the tach.
Yeah, the car may be wired and ready to accept either one. I don't know that for a fact, but somebody that does those a lot might say, yeah, you can put the cluster in it that had more instrumentation, and it'll plug and work.
Yeah.
Whether that's the case or not, I can't tell you for sure, but if that's the way to go with that car, get a used one. If you rely on that tripometer working, then that'd be the best route.
Yeah.
I use that tripometer and the fuel gauge to see how many miles to the gallon I'm getting. And I usually put gas in when it gets to about halfway, but I just put a full gas tank of gas in it yesterday, and the needle doesn't go all the way up to the F. It just goes just shy of the block next to the F. I haven't gotten it down to empty to see just how many miles.
Carry a little can with you and run it all the way to the end.
That's a great idea.
Get.
Yeah.
And another thing, I don't know if I can get this.
Well, very quickly, go ahead.
All right. When I start the car up in the morning and I put it in gear, when it gets to like between to second and shifts to third, it's like it doesn't want to, when the engine's cold, it doesn't want to really shift. You hear the engine rev up like it's missed a gear, and then it catches.
That's a bad sign. Is your transmission fluid at the correct level? Have you checked that?
Yes, it was checked. It was, and I was told that these Hyundais, every like 30,000 miles, they need to be serviced.
Well,
I was also told that they're a very delicate transmission.
Yeah, I mean, that maintenance is definitely a good idea, but it generally doesn't repair or you know, solve a problem like this.
Right.
Yeah. Could be the beginning of a transmission problem.
All right, Cliff, we got to go. I hope
when it warms up, though, the problem seems to go away.
Well, it, like I said, it could be the beginning of something going on in there, but I think a transmission shop would be a good one to ask about.
All right. Hey, thanks, Cliff. Let's go over to Jeff in Latham. Jeff.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey.
My wife has a 2010 Toyota Camry. It's the XLE, and we got it without the navigation, but we got it with the CD player, the FM. And I noticed right away that, and, you know, this is kind of a trivial thing, but I have a Toyota Tundra 2010, and when you're listening to, like, your station or any other station and a song comes up or a show is on, it comes across as what's on the air. And this one, when you stop, everything acts the way it normally acts. And when you start up, as soon as you get above 2 or 3 miles an hour, it freezes. And so if I get on the thruway in Albany, according to my radio, and I get off in Syracuse, I'm listening to the same song. And I took it to the dealer, and the dealer said, well, let's take a look at it. They tried another radio, and they said, oh, that's just that year. And they said the only way to not have that happen would be there's a volume speed control attached to that radio, and if they disconnect that, then it will work fine.
Right. That's what I was going to – I don't know about disconnecting it, but a lot of car sound systems have a feature where you can select it, and the volume increases and decreases with speed. And what they're trying to do is compensate for the noise of the wind and the road and the tires and all that.
Interesting.
And the only way the radio knows that is by getting a signal at for your vehicle speed. And it sounds to me like that vehicle speed signal, something's going haywire, and it's jamming up your that RMS feature that decides what you're listening to and gives you the station and the song or whatever. If they put a different radio in it and nothing changed, then it's probably not the radio, and it has something else to do with the way that signal's getting to the car based on your speed.
So you should probably be able to disable that function.
I don't know. You certainly could, but I don't know how.
They said they could disable that function and it would work fine. And quite frankly, that function doesn't really do anything for me one way or the other. That won't do any damage to the car. I guess that was my question.
Yeah. If you don't care about that feature and they can knock it out of there, then let them do it.
Okay. Jeff, we're going to roll, but good luck. And let's go to Karen in Western Mass. Karen, you're on.
Hi, thank
you. About a minute here.
You've got a great show here. I appreciate it. I've got an 89 Ford Ranger, 90,000 miles. My baby, I had the timing belt replaced maybe, you know, not long ago. And after it, I started having the tachometer do a surge of between, you know, 1,500 amps. I mean, RPMs. So just driving along, straight along, not doing anything special, all of a sudden there's a surge up, surge down.
Huh.
Surge now, down, surge up.
When that tachometer surges up, do you hear the engine speed go up at the exact same time? Or do you feel the car trying to accelerate slightly?
Oh.
What I'm asking you is if you feel as though something is causing the engine to speed up momentarily, or if it's just the needle going up and down and the car goes exactly the same speed.
Yeah, the speed? Well, no, it's almost like it goes, the tachometer, it actually is reducing it. It's almost like the clutch is slipping is what I think of.
Okay.
Is yours an automatic?
It is.
And this is only happening at highway speeds or easy cruising?
I use easy cruising. Yeah.
It could be that your transmission is going in and out of what they call lockup mode, lockup converter mode.
Uh-huh.
And it may or may not be problems with the transmission, but if the tach has a jump of about 500 RPMs, which is, you know, about I don't know, just a half a mark on your needle, and you feel a little bit of a surge, it could be the transmission dipping in and out of that lockup mode.
Is that a bad thing?
It can be.
What's the lockup mode?
Karen, well, I'm afraid we're out of time, and we'll have to leave it there. But
I'll look into it.
Okay, thanks a lot. Yeah, we're done, Gordon. So many calls to go, and I apologize to everybody who didn't make it through. Next time, we'll try to get you here more often. Support comes from Tom Wall Photography, specializing in a contemporary photojournalistic approach to weddings and portraits for the entire WAMC listening area. TomWallPhotography.com. The Franklin D. Roosevelt Presidential Library, presenting the Roosevelts, public figures, private lives, including rare photographs and films, open daily. HistoricHydePark.org. Sanitol Hudson Valley Green Cleaners, a steam vapor sanitizing, helping to create a clean and safe environment by eliminating mold, spores, bacteria, grease, grime, and more. Sanitol.com. And Diamond Mills Hotel and Tavern along the Esopus Falls, Saugerties, New York, presenting the Diamond Mills Wedding Expo, tasting tours and bridal vendors, 11 a.m. Sunday, September 2nd, DiamondMillsHotel.com. That's it for today's show. Thanks to the great Gordon Fricke. Thanks to the great Zach Malloy at the controls. Thanks to the great Christy Carton, who answered our calls. The mostly great Patrick Donjus is our producer, and I'm the very rarely great Ray Graff. Moyers & Company tomorrow. Have a great Labor Day weekend. Tune in next Tuesday for an open forum. Stay tuned now for a news update.